This is a recording from the Piedmont Council of the Arts and their Creative Conversation Series, a forum for arts-related idea exchanges and collaboration. The series brings together arts organizations, artists, educators, and other community leaders to develop strategies for strengthening the arts in our community. The following conversation took place on February 15, 2011, and addressed the question, "What is the value of the arts?" The recording begins with Maggie Guggenheimer, the Executive Director of the PCA.
Welcome, everybody. I think we're going to go ahead and get started. I'm Maggie Guggenheimer. I'm the Director of Piedmont Council for the Arts, and I know almost everybody in the room personally, but for those who have, this is my first time meeting, I'm so glad you're here, and I hope you learn a lot about PCA by participating in this conversation and also by checking out the materials in your packets. So I would like to start by thanking our PCA members, who many of whom are here today. Your membership support really makes programs like this possible. And we try to keep participation fees as low as we can for those who aren't members. If you're interested in membership, check out the materials in the packet and also on our website. We're doing more and more each month in terms of programming and workshops, and we exist to serve artists and arts organizations, also arts audiences, but in terms of membership, artists and organizations really are some of our main focus areas. So I hope you will look into that. I also want to thank the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. They're going to be podcasting the conversation, which is what these things that look like microphones are. But you don't talk in them. They're just recording our conversation, and they will appear on the Charlottesville Podcasting website and also on the PCA website over time, so that community members who weren't able to attend the Creative Conversation can listen to the discussion and kind of get up to speed on what we talked about. I also want to thank Sarah Lawson, who was a big part in planning this program, but unfortunately she has been stricken with flu in a really terrible way. So we're all sending good thoughts in her direction today, and she's definitely with us in spirit. She's the PCA Programs and Communications Director. I want to give you a little background on the Creative Conversation series. We started this program in fall of 2008, and it was really one of the catalysts for a phase when PCA kind of redefined some of our focus areas, and the conversations helped us articulate some priorities for the community in terms of issues of importance to the arts. And we began in that 2008-09 year with some big picture topics. We looked at arts education, we looked at marketing Charlottesville as a creative community or a cultural destination, we looked at access to the arts in our area and what we could do to improve access issues, what access even means. And we were really kind of brainstorming, we were asking questions, we were beginning the collaboration process, the discussion process, bringing together a variety of community members, not just people from the arts community, but also business leaders, teachers, parents, elected officials, city employees. So this forum began as a way to start talking, and really not much more than that. We didn't have an idea, a specific idea of what would come out of it, and I like that element of the program because it helps us decide together where the arts community needs to go, what PCA can do to support initiatives that come out as priority areas from the creative conversation. The second year of our series, we went from those big picture ideas down to some more concrete examples or specific programs that we could look at as evidence of, you know, very successful things that we're doing in our arts community or challenge areas, perhaps examples from other cities that we could look at. We reviewed the Storyline Project in the fall. We looked at an organization called Create Here in Chattanooga, Tennessee, in the winter. And then we looked very specifically at the Arts Access Project in the spring of that year. And we really got down into more of a debating phase for this conversation. What's working, what's not? Where should we be focusing our energies as we move these programs forward or maybe take them in different directions or build programs after good examples that we find in other cities and other communities? What we did at the end of the second year is really the precursor to what we'll be talking about today, and that was to get on the ground floor and start doing some things. And I don't mean just PCA when I say we, I mean the arts community and many of the participants from the first 2 years of the Creative Conversations. Some of you have heard about PCA's Arts Access Project. I hope a lot of you have. This is a four-pronged strategy that we've developed directly as a result from creative conversation discussions to help increase accessibility to the arts in our community, to reduce some of the barriers to participation in the arts, specifically for low-income communities. The Arts Access Project focuses on everything from leadership to information services and community awareness and really changing the way the arts are perceived. It's a long-term project, and that we're still very much in the development phase of, and we probably will continue to be as we work through in the community. We also launched an Arts and Economic Prosperity Study. That survey that I mentioned in the About PCA side of your packet is really the best illustration of this project. It's the one-pager that arts audience members will be filling out throughout the entire year as PCA helps coordinate the study of the economic impact of the arts here in Charlottesville. These specific initiatives came from what people said in these meetings were important. We know that the arts have an economic return. We know that arts are drivers of our local economy, but we don't know exactly how much. So that's why we're doing the study. We know that the arts are a really valuable part of quality of life in Charlottesville, but we know they're not accessible to everybody. That's why we're doing the Arts Access Project. Similarly, a lot of you come from initiatives and organizations that have responded to items of importance, the Buy Art, Give Art campaign. We have a couple representatives here from that. I'm sure they'll tell us more about it. Sarah Lawson, who again couldn't be here, but her Commonplace Arts Initiative, putting art in storefronts in the downtown mall. You probably have all seen the pink kangaroos. Things like that that may not be shepherded by an institution or a formal nonprofit organization, but they're examples of people responding to perceived needs for the arts community. So this creative conversation and this sort of wave of programming in the roundtable discussion forum responds to some of that. And we're taking kind of a moment, I would say, to synthesize some of the work that's being done, some of the projects that have been developed in response, and look at what we're doing in the next phase. What are some of the big topics for the next realm of creative conversation discussion, or what do we want to focus our energies on as we move forward? So I'm hoping that you will all bring to this discussion questions in addition to comments. And the guiding questions in your packet are just suggestions. It's kind of where some of the things that the PCA staff and I wanted to look at, but you may have other things that you'd like to discuss, and that's okay. So I would like to kind of transition now into introduction phase, where we go around the room and everyone explains who they are and why they're here. And if you could talk specifically about any organizational affiliations that you have, whether or not they're all listed on the contact sheet, I hope that you'll give us a sort of 360 view of your work in the arts or your interest in the arts. And I'm going to take a little bit longer than normal. We've, in the past, restricted this to a minute per person to just kind of get around the room. But because we don't have a panel and this is really a conversation that you're going to be driving, I want you to feel free to take a little bit longer than that. You don't have to rush through your introduction. However, this is not an opportunity to plug your program. So there'll be times for some networking over lunch, and we can certainly identify areas that need more discussion as we talk, but don't derail the conversation during intros by telling us about some program coming up next week that everyone should attend. I hope you understand. But we can do some of that later in the conversation as it comes through the discussion. We're going to start on this side of the room. Jody?
I'm Jody Gilbasa. I'm the director of the Virginia Film Festival, which is presented by the University of Virginia. And I've been with the festival now for about 20 months. And the festival is in November, if you're not familiar with it. This past year, we screened about 131 films in 4 days, and we had close to about 24,000 people attend. Affiliations, we have a large outreach and education program, and we work with Festival of the Book, we work with Charlottesville Ballet, we work with Lighthouse, Sprout, Arc of the Piedmont, 100 Young Black Men, Boys and Girls Club is part of that, and the Charlottesville school system as well. We had about 4,000 children and families show up on our family day. We presented a screening of Freedom Riders with three of the original Freedom Riders at the Martin Luther King Performing Arts Center for about 1,000 high school and junior high school students and middle school students. Showing my age there. And, you know, finally, the great thing about the festival is that because we screened so many different films about so many different topics, including art films as well, we have an opportunity to partner in any given year with a number of different cultural organizations and social service organizations, and we always look forward to doing that. So I'm here because of that. Thank you.
I'm Janet Bruce. I'm fairly new to Charlottesville. I have a background in the arts. I worked at the Phillips Collection in Washington, D.C., and then subsequently studied with Bill Christenberry, a Washington artist whose work is based on Hale County, Alabama. And I'm a painter, and I work in a studio in Belmont. And so because I'm fairly new to the community and I work in the studio by myself, I learned about this organization and thought it would be a good way to meet more people who are working in the arts and learn more about what Charlottesville is doing in terms of the arts. So for me, it was to learn more and see if there was something I could do as a volunteer or something like that. Also, just, you know, just to sort of get a better sense of what's going on here.
I'm Julia Kindred, and I'm a member of Ozark Gallery. Ozark just took in members from Art Upstairs, which was another independent cooperative gallery in Charlottesville. And so now our membership is almost doubled. I'm also a member of Piedmont Pastellas and Central Virginia Watercolor Guild and PCA and Virginians and Americans for the Arts. I'm here just to help with the conversation and try to come up with some ideas how to promote the arts.
My name is Christian DeBon, and I'm here representing the Charlottesville Photography Meetup Group, which is kind of a fledgling group of photographers that formed back in, I guess, October of 2009. And we've gone from about 10 photographers up to almost 250 photographers here in Charlottesville. And the thrust of our group is primarily philanthropic and educational. We've done a fair amount of nonprofit photography work for UVA Children's Hospital, the SPCA. We partnered ourselves with Albemarle High School, Charlottesville High School, working with some of their students. We've done a lot of nonprofit work, and we love running workshops. We love giving back to the community. So I'm really here to see if I can find some ideas about fundraising. We'd like to find a permanent home for our organization sometime this summer. We'll be working a little bit with some of the folks at the Look Through Festival to photograph. So we're hoping to have a fundraiser. We're hoping to build a permanent home for photography here in Charlottesville that's open to the community, where we can give back to the community. So thanks very much for letting me be here. So great. Hoping to drink in all the knowledge.
I'm Billy Hunt, and I'm the owner of Billy Hunt Photography and Video now. I also, and the whole time, I've sort of thought of what I do is I've always kind of considered myself to have sort of two businesses. One where I practice like the craft of photography and I just sort of do whatever people want to pay me to do, and I'm basically doing what other people want me to do. And then I've this other business with like no expectation of income, where I do sort of what I want to do or just whatever sort of captures my interest. And I just kind of dovetail those together. And I sort of use the second one. That's, I consider it sort of my, like, well, it's the reason for being a photographer and now video person, but also it's advertising for the other business, this service where, you know, where that's gone on. In addition to, you know, doing my own thing, I've been involved with a lot of different organizations. I'm on the board of Lighthouse, which, you know, does education with regards to video for kids over, you know, it's pretty cool. And then I've tried to, in this second business with no expectation of income, I've tried to help out some of the different organizations that are here as well, and just, you know, doing some of my own random stuff. But, yeah.
Hi, I'm Ben Jigsaw Jones. I'm the development and marketing assistant at Live Arts, the theater that's just down the mall here.
We've been around for about 20 years, and as a completely volunteer-driven organization devoted to live performing arts, and we're sort of undergoing a point in our history where we are interested in expanding our mission of forging theater and community into new areas, trying to expand the people who both come to see things that we present and get involved. I'm also an artist and video maker and puppeteer, and have been involved in various aspects of the arts for most of my life here and around. So the issue of access to the arts and the value of art has always been something that has been important to me, both as a maker of art, a viewer of art, and at one point or another seller of art of other people. So I'm here to hear and hopefully contribute something to the conversation.
I'm Annie D. I'm a silversmith artist at Skylight Studios and part of the Buy Art, Give Art program. But I'll let Kate tell you about that. And so I'm just here to participate.
I'm Kate Barton. I'm an artist and opened Skylight Studios in 2009 as studio spaces for artists and then a place to show other local artwork and TV 3D. But we do a lot of teach classes and basically want to be a creative space and a place for artists to feel supported, but then also bring the community in as much as possible and reach out to them. So I'm here because I think it's really important for the arts community to realize how much we need each other and rely on each other for support, and then also getting the community involved in that. So. From that came, I helped jumpstart Buy Art, Give Art, which launched in December of last year, just to really kind of bring some awareness back to the visual arts. And, it's a really a simple idea. It was just giving out a custom button for people who bought artwork in Charlottesville to support local artists. So, definitely still in different phases and doing more of that. Talk about it. Peter helped jumpstart as well.
Yeah, I'm Peter Krebs. I'm a resident of McGuffey Art Center. McGuffey is a little bit unique because we're actually resident within a building that's owned by the city. So we have a mandate to be a community resource. We're exploring always what that means to be a community resource. But on a straightforward, obvious level, we're open to the public, and so that's exhibition spaces that are walk-in, walk-out. But I think the more interesting thing is that our studios are also required to be open to the public. So the public walks in, we engage very directly. So it feels like being on the front lines of being an artist in a way that hasn't been the case since I was a street artist. So that it's really interesting. We really interact a lot. And as well as sitting passively waiting for people to come into our studios, we also do outreach programs that I could talk about another time. So so that's interesting. Then a second project that I'm working on that also makes this conversation appeal to me is that I'm doing a documentation program of my street where I live, Monticello Road, and it's really an exploration of what is the community and specifically what is the artist's role within the community. I would like to get to a place where I understand my role within the community as well as the baker does or the auto mechanic who I just met yesterday, and so forth. And so, yeah, so there's two angles that I'm coming from. One is the program where I work, and then also my own artwork is about the community now. So it's good to be.
My name is Andrew Owen. I'm the managing director of the Look at the Festival of the Photograph, and we started our first program in 2007, and we are coming back to the downtown mall this coming June, and we are in a lot of ways like the film festival in that we don't actually own much real estate, but yet we try to sort of make ourselves as accessible as possible by partnering with other venues. So we probably bring in anywhere from 15 to 18 different exhibits in the month of June. So that means we partner with McGuffey, with Second Street Gallery, with Chroma Arts Gallery, Warm Springs Gallery. Almost any arts organization that is on the downtown mall is a store or a nonprofit, whatever it may be. We'd like to encourage them to either partner with us or bring in their own photography shows. And then we have what we call insight conversations, kind of like an inside the actor's studio type program with three sort of legendary photographers. And then we supplement our program with sort of shorter, more half-hour style conversations, and then nighttime projections in the pavilion. And we really are trying to be a kind of a global meeting place for photographers who tend to go off to various corners of the world and make their assignments, and then often by themselves, and then having them be able to come to Charlottesville where they're not competing with, you know, things going on in New York or LA, you know, when they're here in Charlottesville and they're on the downtown mall. It's like an opportunity for Louisville community and the sort of the photographic community to come together and pay homage to all the great work that's been done in the past year. So again, last year we didn't really have a full program. We focused on an emerging photographer program, and then this year in 2011. We're coming back in June.
My name is Matt Clayburgh, and I'm a painter. I have a studio at McGuffey next door to Peter, and I've been there since July, and went to UVA and have been in the community for about 7 years, I guess, and have had some involvement with the New City Arts Initiative, which Mo will talk about, and I'm sort of another McGuffey artist rep.
I'm Sam Bush. I live with Matt. In addition to that, I help run an art space called The Garage on First Street. It's a small single car garage, and it's been open for about 2 years. It's mostly a music venue and an art gallery with monthly installations, and we have more events in the warmer months. But I'm really open to opening that space up for all types of events that bring people together. We've had letter writing events. We're having a ping pong tournament this spring, and I'd love to sort of explore the value that I think art really has in community, just simply by bringing people together. You've got these concerts where 100 different people are coming from so many different places in life and geographically. I think that's a very valuable thing during arts events. I'd love to explore sort of what that's about and new ways for the garage to have more events and bring more people together.
I'm Maureen, or Mo, and I'm the arts director for the New City Arts Initiative. And one of the things we do is provide affordable and sometimes alternative space for artists to work and perform. So we run the WBTF gallery off of Water Street. We support events that are going on at the garage. We also seek to sort of facilitate creative engagement between artists and sometimes people that don't necessarily consider themselves artists through different conversations and like smaller gatherings. So we just launched a monthly Artist Way group that's going through an Artist Way curriculum together and meeting in one another's houses. We partner with a lot of churches to sort of take what they're doing in the arts and give it a little bit more civic access. And then we're also located at the Haven, so we have an artist in residence there, and we're trying to facilitate more creative programming among the homeless and poor in our community.
My name is Nancy Jane Dodge. I'm an artist and a professional picture framer. I really love being an artist and being able to be a help the artist in our community. Probably 99% of my clients are artists, so that's how I contribute to them and to me, because I'm very selfish about being able to hang their artwork in my apartment. It's very nice. And I'm here just to find out more about, you know, what we're all doing. You know, just be in touch with the community and be a part of it. And that's pretty much it. Thank you.
My name is Chris Engel. I work with the City of Charlottesville and the Office of Economic Development, and I am perhaps the least artistic individual in the room at the moment, given the other introductions. But I do hope that I recognize the value of the arts in the community in our role in encouraging economic development and economic vibrancy in our community. So I'm excited to be part of this conversation. Been part of some of the previous conversations, and they're always interesting and insightful. I'm also on the board of the Visitors Bureau, which is a partner in the Arts and Economic Prosperity Study, which Maggie alluded to earlier, and we're excited to see the results of that kind of as a starting point for, you know, what some of the value that we can measure that's already here with respect to the arts. So with that, I'll pass the baton.
I'm Dick Carpenter. I've been a lifetime artist, a hobby artist, and in Charlottesville the last 18 years with the Central Virginia Watercolor Guild and the Senior Center, in which I participate in several two-dimensional groups, Friday Art Group, Piedmont Pastellus, which spun off from the Watercolor Guild 10 years ago, and meets at the Senior Center in a self-critique mode. I'm interested in the idea of fostering hobby artists and providing venues. We have a gallery in the entrance foyer of the Senior Center, and we've just installed track lighting in that, for example. And we welcome senior artists, whether they're members of the center or not, to come and display in that venue. And so I'm interested again in exploring more of the opportunities for seniors, particularly in two-dimensional art.
I'm Jean Wilhelm, and I've been in Charlottesville a long, long time. What I'm representing here today is very special arts. And I put two pieces of paper in front of you because I thought that this would fill you in on what we've been doing with people with disabilities. And we started about 12 years ago when Mildred Spicer of the Charlottesville Recreation Department and some of the staff of some of the organizations like Art for the Piedmont, Independence Resource Center, WorkSource Enterprises, those organizations their staff came to the Piedmont Council of the Arts and said, we want to start something in the arts, but most of our board members of our organizations are businessmen or, you know, professional people, and they really don't see how this would help the people that we're serving. And so they came to us and said, what can you do to help? And I said, I was on the board of PCA, and I said, I'd be glad to do this because I'd done some in my undergraduate years in the School of Drama at the University of Washington. And I knew that the arts did mean something to almost anybody you've ever known. And so we started then. And we had two real purposes. One was to include all these people in what was going on in the community already. And the other was to let them explore the arts in some way, shape, or form so that they can really have this wonderful feeling of creating, which is within all of us, not just those of us who have our complete facilities. It started 12 years ago. It's funded by the city and the county recreation departments. Mildred Spicer of the city does most of the organizational work of handling the funds and this sort of thing. And we started off with our first inclusive activity, which was a Festival of the Book activity. And right away, we had a woman in town who was a creative drama professor at a New York university who was also a puppeteer, and she came in and right away developed a program. We had a writer who came in and helped people think about what they could do to write. So we began with that. Then one of our second things was McGuffey Artists. 10 years ago, the McGuffey Artists joined the Very Special Arts Art Show, and they began to hang all of the works in the Martin Luther King Performing Arts Center, main lobby room. And we've been doing that for 10 years, and they did a beautiful job this year. So we've done many, many different things, and they're all on those two pieces of paper. The one typewritten one is something that we send out to the board members of all of these organizations, who are all business people or professional people, most of them, or volunteers. And we let them know what's gone on that year, what's coming up, and so we try to fill them in and get them interested and get them to come to the art show. It runs for 2 months, but then Lindsay Dorier, a county board of supervisors member, came and said, this is only up for 2 months. He said, why don't we move it into the county office building? So there we are. At the first part of March, it'll be in the county office building for everybody to see. The people who work with us are artists in a variety of different fields with interests. Sometimes we're able to pay people, and we do that by having them sign up with the city government as a vendor. And then we're able to use some of these recreation department funds. So this is what we've got. We've got a variety of ways that we can use organizations or the things that organizations do. So we're right there, ready to work with you and show you what we do and how much it is loved by the people who participate in it. That's children and adults. I'm sorry.
That's a tough act to follow. I'm Ellen Hathaway, and I'm here because I love to make art. Most recently, I have been painting in acrylics, and I find that the more that I enjoy making art, the more I'm gravitating to programs that PCA is putting out. I'm starting to look for more things. I've been in the Watercolor Guild for several years, and I'm president of that now. And I have just joined the board of New City Arts. And I'm also really interested in what Kate Barton is doing with the promoting local art. So I guess that's really kind of the gist. And in the Watercolor Guild, we promote watercolor. And as watercolor, as time progresses, watercolor has taken on a very different meaning. It's water media now. It's everything from your transparent watercolor that is traditional to everything acrylic, which are plastics. And now you have oils, which are water-based. So watercolor and the vision of the guild has certainly evolved and expanded over the years, and we've been in existence for 20 years, and so it's just an exciting time with that. But I just think the whole process and assimilation of art into our lives, rather than simply looking at it as an end product, is what I'm interested in, and I think the more that I enjoy making the art, I just want to immerse myself in art. So it's, as I said, the process rather than the end.
I'm Marietta Dunn. I'm the director of the Enrichment Alliance. And the Enrichment Alliance is a small local group that tries to bring people and resources and ideas together to enrich the out-of-school time of critically underserved children. In practice, what that means, we are part of VSA Arts, and we do offer workshops through VSA Arts. We also have just joined the Arts League program and are involved in that through the both through the Arts League and then the other Arts Access. We will have a student in the Arts Grow program, which we're really, really excited about. We have, for a number of years, offered children's programs to children that are focusing on inclusion, children with and without disabilities, and refugees. And we've also had done some partnerships in the community, a lot with people that are associated with McGuffey. We have been working with Dee Bakstrom, who is was artist president, but is now an associate. And last year we have a program with her called Monumental Collaborations, where she goes out into a community of underserved people and collaborates with them to design and create a sculpture. So she just finished a wonderful dragon sculpture at William Monroe Middle School in Greene County to target rural children who have less access, and we expect to be working on a city initiative with refugees, which was on pause and is starting back up, and until that's completely confirmed, I don't want to say a lot more about that. What we're really interested in right now, we've had a little bit of mentoring going on where we can send a mentor into a community-based program. Last summer we had a mentor at McGuffey's Pathfinders program for the whole summer so that children with disabilities could be included in those activities. And we're going to be putting a lot of energy in that direction in the future. So one of the things I'm really interested here is how we can partner with artists in the community, both artists who might want to do some volunteer work and also artists who run programs like the Lighthouse, programs through McGuffey, who might be interested in working on inclusion with us and might be interested in having some support of a mentor to be able to include with special needs. Also, studio space, I'd like to, was it you, Kristen, who was looking for somebody? We might have a possibility.
Thank you.
Possibly. My name's Jessica Thayer. I consult with artists, and I've just been a fan of what Maggie's doing. My sense of Charlottesville is the there's a lack of help in terms of communication, creating a creative community. And I think that PCA's model is the answer to what's missing in Charlottesville. And I'm just amazed at what Maggie's developed over the last few years. You can now go online and monthly, you can see what organizations are doing, what volunteer opportunities there are. And there's this way now to network that's never been there before. And I'm really interested in seeing how this model can now be, how UVA can use this model, how architects can use this model, how health organizations here can use this model, so that we become these networks that are all speaking to each other within the networks, and then there's a way that these networks work with each other so that it really is a creative city. So that's my opinion. And this about the arts in Virginia really, to me, is the answer about why the arts are valuable, and then it's sort of becoming that creative city.
I'm Becky Lee. I'm the program coordinator at Big Brothers Big Sisters, and we are a professionally supported one-to-one mentorship program. We serve 46 kids right now, so they meet with a volunteer mentor. They go out in the community for about 2 hours a week to share an activity. A lot of our matches share a lot of artistic and creative pursuits. So then in terms of our interaction with this program, encouraging them to attend performances of dance, music, we get free tickets through the Arts Access website, identifying kids who might be able to be part of the Arts Grow program to really kind of identify and develop those positive youth development assets in partnership with the mentor and the family.
Thank you so much. It's nice, I know it took a little longer to get around, but it's nice to let everyone have a chance to speak and explain kind of the various connections that you have. This happens to be a very visual arts heavy group, in case you haven't noticed already, and that was not intentional. I think PCA has a natural connection with the arts, visual arts community, because of our location in McGuffey Arts Center, but we're definitely here to serve all different genres of the arts, and I'm so glad we have some representatives from the Performing Arts Center, so speak loudly. And I wanted to just remind you that from here on out, the conversation is kind of wherever we want to take it, and I'll be functioning as a facilitator, and hopefully we'll help summarize some of the key concepts towards the end of the conversation, but I really want you to drive it. And I'm going to begin by kind of coming to the topic of this event, which is what is the value of the arts, and several of you have touched on it. And the reason why we had that big question was because I felt that it really was an overarching theme, not only of the different things that the conversations over the last 3 years have looked at, from education to access to economic development, but also, you know, each of us has our own reason for being involved in the arts, and we have a personal connection to it, also a community connection to it, and it's something that we're smart to always be thinking about and be able to articulate so that we can advocate for the arts effectively and so that we can grow and make decisions together moving in a forward direction. So I'd like everyone to make sure you have the guiding questions in front of you because sometimes it's hard to get started. And if someone would please choose one of the guiding questions that they felt really resonated with them, or maybe that didn't resonate with you, and open up the conversation, I would appreciate it. Or I will.
Well, the one that resonated with me is, do you agree or disagree with the idea of art as luxury?
I will say I have a footnote to that question. That was a debate that occurred in our Access to the Arts creative conversation in 2008. We actually had a debate of people saying the arts are a luxury item. You know, not everyone in this community can participate in them, and there was a little bit of a dialogue. So, does anyone have any thoughts on that concept?
I would say from the point of view of an educator that the research has demonstrated over and over and over again that children that are engaged in informal creative activities outside of the regular school day have higher in-school performance, less truancy, less juvenile delinquency, less teenage pregnancy, less drug and alcohol use, and generally are just have a much more positive experience growing up than children that are not included in those activities.
So the arts certainly supplement our education system.
And it really differentiates the haves from the have-nots. So when we're not providing these meaningful, creative, and engaging activities for children whose families are not able to provide them for them, or who are limited in their access because they have disabilities, then we're widening the gap.
Such a huge question. Because we do face a difficulty, you know, to talk about this question with any depth, you have to think about the economic impact of, you know, being an artist full time, which some would definitely argue is the only way that you can truly develop your art to an extent where you're satisfied with the level of your own creation. Some could argue that that's not necessarily a thing, but you know, becoming an artist, you know, as your profession, be it performing arts or visual arts, what have you, that, you know, finding some way of doing that often in this particular time leads to the arts being more expensive. And so finding ways of counteracting that, you know, where we want to be good to the artists that are creating these things and make sure that they can pay rent and eat and do all of these things that unfortunately financially are necessary, but also mean that that the art itself still has a price tag that does not lead it to being perceived as a luxury item. And I briefly had a gallery in New York, and one of the founding ideas behind the gallery was that art should be something that's affordable, that it should be something that if you just decide not to eat out one night that month, that you could have a piece of art instead of having a poster or instead of having some scrap of newspaper on your wall, that you could have an actual piece of art that someone created. Something that we look at Live Arts is that we have pay what you can nights, and trying to figure out how to, like say, well, our ticket prices are normally this, but on this night.
So we're kind of constantly, at least one good example is the Arts and Economic Prosperity Study. I feel like as the facilitator of that initiative, we're kind of straddling this line of the arts are accessible. They are free in many cases in this community. You can walk right into a gallery and see art. But also we want to know that they're more than that, that people are paying to eat in restaurants and stay in hotels to go to festivals. So we're making both arguments all the time. And I think we may be sending a confusing message, you know? Why should we ask a question like, are the arts a luxury? Is it an important thing for us that, you know, have a sense of, or is it just going to be an eternal debate?
One thing I'd like to ask about your study is the same type of arguments are made about financing football stadiums. And not to say that that's a bad thing, but when you're talking about a football stadium, the community says, okay, we're going to get this out of, we're going to have this economic impact. We're all going to benefit in this way from having the football stadium. And so then the community goes ahead and ponies up in a big investment for this. And does that happen in the arts? Is what sort of...
Sure it does.
What, the research.
There's a lot of... you know, input, monetary input from city and county in the arts. Your outdoor art program that we have there, the grants to various organizations that happen, I don't think you can put it on a par with building a football stadium by any means, but I do think that there's a commitment there. I guess it gets down to the root of the question is, what does the question mean? Is it the perception of art as a luxury, thereby it's tough for city or county then to put funding behind it because it's perceived as something that's elitist? I know I constantly get overwhelmed when I open up Seville or Hook and I look at all the art offerings that are going on and how many of them are offered for free, particularly to children and families. I can't access all of them. It's literally overwhelming. We try and pick and choose according to what we're available to go and see. But there certainly is affordable art out there. But I guess is what Maggie, what is meant by that? Is that art is a luxury because artists can't afford to devote their entire life or career to it because they have to put bread on the table and have a place, a roof over their heads? Or is it art perceived as a luxury that the community can't support it through taxes?
Well,
I think it's all of the above. I mean, in the context of the conversation where it came up, it was a woman talking about how low income community members cannot participate in the arts because they don't have the luxury of having the maybe expendable income, free time, context. I don't know all of her specific reasons, but she was talking about low income community. And that for them, the arts are sort of a luxury item. Maybe they get some of it in school, but they don't have the time or the money to invest in it. And then it's not a priority for low-income communities because they're dealing with bigger, more important issues. And then on the other side, when you look at the study from the big picture perspective, the materials that Americans for the Arts give us say, the materials that they give us say that one of the reasons why you do a study like this is to help make the argument that the arts are more than a luxury item. They're not something that we can invest in when times are prosperous and that when we're able to spread some extra funding around. There's something that has a return, and that even in a time of recession, a study like this will show us that there are dollars coming back into the community because of arts activity.
I think of the arts as being like sort of a medium or long-term goal. Like they're a luxury in that if you're trying to meet your short-term goals, and I think this could be true with education, you know, if you look at education and, you know, you're not going to make your SOL things through the arts. But as far as, like, investing in the student and their growth, it sort of works that way. And I think, if you have festivals, that's a little even more measurable, which is nice, but it can be harder to measure and it can be more, it's like more of an investment, if that makes any sense, you know? So it's harder to measure, and so many communities and so many individuals and so many businesses are so focused on their short-term, you know, putting food on the table that they don't really feel as if they have time to do the, like, sort of long-term savings plan that the arts provide.
Well, we've talked about kind of a number of different ways to look at the question, and it seems as though there's some areas that keep popping up. One is education. One is artists and what individual artists need. Another is funding and supporting the arts from a more sort of institutional perspective. Do you have a sense of those three things, what would be most effective to focus on here in our conversation for the next, say, 15 minutes after we get lunch or something? Anyone have?
Well, the other issue that seemed to come up a lot was the pure issue of time. As Joey was saying, there's all of these events, the access is there, but how do we've cut out, perhaps successfully, the financial element of luxury, but how do we address the issue of time? You know, organizations can maybe take a hit to their profits and offer these things for free, but how do we make it so that the people that need that access, where the financial may have been the first hurdle, have enough time to actually take part?
Yeah, but I don't think you can to a point. I think that what you can do is what Maggie's doing and what arts organizations try to do, like yourself, which is offer pay what you can, during the film festival we do a free family day where all of our programming is free, and I'm certainly there's other organizations that do similar things. You can go into museums here for free. At some point, at least in terms of education, it's up to the parents at the end of the day, and we can't physically go down into the households in many circumstances and tell the parents, hey, you have an opportunity to go to a museum today for free. It's not going to cost you anything. We may even help you get there. You can try as much as you can to educate everybody. It's about information. It's about putting that out there. I mean, I think there are limits to what we can solve out there, too. I think it's about communication and actually providing, setting the table for people to come. And doing as much as you can in terms of outreach, I feel that's important too. You have to make them aware. But at some point,
I sort of disagree because I don't think it works. I mean, I don't think that this group is representative of our community. You know what I'm saying? I don't think that I go to an art museum, I don't think that's right. I mean, it's available and it's free, but I don't see that being enough. I don't see it working. You know what I mean? I mean, when I worked with the Bridge, and they do this, they do like photo education, and they would have to, we did a project down in Southwood, and the woman Gloria would have to go bang on people's doors to get them to come, and the people who were there, their parents had no value, they didn't value the arts at all, and I think in like a lot of lower income families, sort of good parenting is about protection, if that makes any sense, like you're sort of protecting the person physically, mm-hmm. and so new experiences and new opportunities and things like that, that sort of violates that rule of good parenting. So parents will kind of block you a little, you know, because that's unsafe, you know, we don't know, that's out of the comfort zone, whatever, that kind of thing, and they don't think about that long-term sort of enrichment. And I think, I don't know, I was amazed at Gloria's ability to like just really just go into the community and drive and know the people and kind of be involved with them and bring them and drag them kicking and screaming into the education thing, and the kids yeah. were responsive, and I feel like they benefited from that level of engagement and involvement.
I agree with you. I just think that there's a limit to what we can be responsible for. I'm not saying that we should curtail our outreach and education efforts, but I think at some point you can set the table, you can go in physically, you may not be able to drag them away. I think they have jails for that, so we have to be careful with kidding.
One of the things I want to interject here, this is a debate that came up in our education and access conversation, and some of you are probably part of that, and from the Arts Council's perspective, what we can do, what Jody is saying, is limited. We're a small organization. We have a staff of 2 part-time people, small budget. But we're trying to look at the very real phenomenon that you're talking about, Billy, and come up with some constructive things that we can do to start somewhere. No, we can't physically go knock on doors every day. But we can highlight some key things that we think can change behaviors, specifically leadership, youth in the arts, information services, and community perception. And that's exactly what the Arts Access Project does. It has identified some of those pressure points and come up with small, tangible steps forward that we can make. And I'm not going to talk at length about that. There's information out there, and some of our Arts League participants are here. You can ask them. But I bring it up because I want to make sure that we understand in this room what we're doing is thinking big picture. We're not necessarily here to talk about problems, although problems are a big part of how we develop solutions and action plans. But think about, you know, for example, livable communities for artists. That came up a few times. What are some forward-thinking things that we can do, some priorities? Is studio space an issue? Is our main issue in this community access? Because that's come up a lot. Is it perceptions of ticket prices or time? So I want you to think about that. I'm going to break for lunch. I have a comment that I wanted to share. It's part of our what we were talking about just then, but I'm going to embarrass my mom. This is my mother over here, Bonnie Guggenheimer. She's an artist in Lynchburg, and she's filling in for Sarah today. I'm totally embarrassing her, but she's taking notes. And she brought up something when we broke for lunch that I wanted to share with you because it has come up now, I think, 3 times in the last couple of weeks. I was having a conversation with a representative from the Oak Hill Fund recently, and we were talking about the arts and talking about all the different arts institutions in town that need support and need audiences. And he said, you know, the head of the NEA has come out with a sort of controversial statement, some of you may have heard it, and I will not be able to quote it. This is a summary, and it's from other people's mouths, so I'm sorry if I botch it. But the idea is that the head of the NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts, feels that there may be actually too many theaters or arts institutions, too many seats to fill in our communities around the country, and that we need to be thinking about generating arts audiences, not arts programs or arts houses or institutions. And it's, of course, a kind of bold statement for someone in that role to make as head of an entity that exists to support the arts, but it touches on some of the challenges that we're talking about, that we want to make sure our artists and our arts institutions are well supported, well funded, well attended, but we're also spreading ourselves pretty thin and trying to do to make our art the product great, to make our arts programming great, and also to go out there and generate new audiences for the arts as audiences age or as accessibility becomes a greater issue. So I wanted to bring that comment up. You can
reply to it if you'd like when we go around in small groups, or we can come back after the small group report and talk about it. But
can we have a round of applause for your mother?
Yes. You're very, very dedicated. Thank you. All right, I'm going to start. We started over there last time. I'm going to start with this group. And if I'm putting you on the spot, you can pass. But I'd like you to just, one person from each group, tell a little bit about what you discussed or what your follow-up thoughts were.
Overall, I think the important things that the group would like the community to come away with would be understanding that those who have any kind of disability are not necessarily being supported or included in arts activities or events, and that parents should understand that it is illegal for them to be, for their child to be excluded from an event, and that the understanding of why art is important for every child and valuable whether or not they have a disability. So, okay,
well, I think income too. I think we talked about income as well, but yeah.
And the access, that the issue of access of transportation, that finances limit the ability to have access to the arts, and then the notion that free doesn't make it accessible, that there are issues like relationship building, transportation, cultural relevancy, and you, it's not just about offering an activity.
And then just one other thing was that the arts offer a venue for developing competency and confidence if there aren't other venues for that in a child's school day or kind of their other environment. So it's an important opportunity for that. And then Mariana's study showed that kind of participation after school activities can also lead to higher grades as well. So that experience of confidence and competency will often spread to other areas.
All right.
Thank you. Next group.
I guess that's us. Our conversation focused on primarily the evolution of what it means to be part of the creative, to be creative, or be an artist, or be in that community over a period of years. Where many, many years ago it was, you know, if you were a painter, you were a creative person, but it was a very kind of a smaller group of folks that were in that, and how over the years that definition has grown and the perception of that definition has changed. I referenced the book, The Rise of the Creative Class, that was written probably almost a decade ago now, but I think we discussed in one of these forums previously, but it talks about the roughly a third of the population derives their daily livelihood from some type of creative endeavor, and the definition used for creativity was expanded upon to include, you know, architects and interior designers and you know, art teachers and painters and theater folks and quite a large group. So that was just a point of reference that I had, and then Nancy was really kind of focusing on, we didn't come up with a great idea, but we thought that making it more acceptable to be part of the creative class and derive your livelihood from that ought to be something that we strive for, you know, as a community, to make it, you know, okay and acceptable and desirable, in fact, to be part of that group would kind of naturally kind of float the boat of creativity in general in the community if more people were part of that. So I think that's where we ended up. You guys jump in.
I think that covers it.
All right, let me flip the page.
Our brief conversation, I think, continued some of what we talked about before lunch, and that is sort of the concept of luxury. And I obviously don't speak for all the groups here, but there are some groups here that are funded primarily by donors, large donors, and there are events in this town that benefit greatly from art auctions and from black tie dinners, and so the sort of the financial model that a lot of nonprofits and arts organizations take is one that courts wealthy donors who want to give to arts organizations. And so I really think that that, well, we thought that that played into the sort of perception of art as luxury, but it's not one that is easily reversible. And maybe bringing the patrons into the organization through access projects and through free programming, so that it's not just, we want your dollars, come to these fancy parties. Maybe that would help bridge that gap. But, you know, and another thing that came up about luxury is that there is a demand for really good art. And, like, maybe you're a hobbyist or you're a young artist, but the better the community and the sort of art-buying public values your work, the higher the price becomes. And that helps you become a professional artist. So that is not necessarily a bad thing, but from the other side of the coin, it's sort of perpetuating that kind of paradigm of art as luxury, and yet it's what's sustaining professional artists. So I don't know. I don't think we certainly didn't come up with any solutions, and you guys jump in if I missed anything. But and maybe not all. If it's not great art, maybe it shouldn't be free. So we were just sort of playing around with this idea of luxury and the good things about it, and some of the shortfalls.
I'm afraid we kind of wandered around in the wilderness a little bit. there's a lot of bullet points on here to cover in the space of a two-hour meeting, but we did get a couple of nice little nuggets out of it. Part of our conversation, we were talking about educating a community, that there's a lot of emphasis placed on educating children. Interrupt me if I get this wrong, Peter. But children only represent a very small percentage of the population, so how do you get together and kind of educate people that are different age strata? How do you kind of get them to know more about what's going on and what's available to them? Kate brought up a really good point about profits and nonprofits sometimes don't necessarily work together. So she threw out a really good question of how do you get profits, nonprofits, and there was one other group you mentioned too.
Just the community element.
Yeah, community. How do you bring all those together and make them kind of synergistic and have them work hand in hand together? Not necessarily that profits and nonprofits would be at odds with each other, but how do you kind of get that going? Billy kind of brought up an interesting point about that there isn't enough emphasis on the quality of artwork these days because we're just flooded, we're bombarded with this, you know, information from everywhere. Everybody's walking around with a handheld computer these days. You know, there's this ton of visual stuff that's coming through there. You know, an artist kind of moved towards, I guess we talked about a transactional model, right? So, you know, you pay for this micro thing of something art, you know, and it somewhat lessens the prestige, perhaps, of other pieces of artwork. And I think that's kind of what we talked about.
Well, there's also the element of focusing that perhaps one thing that would benefit a lot of these issues is to remove that transactional focus and move more towards a focus not on the end product of art, but on the actual process. The idea of increasing value and perceived value without increasing economic impact by allowing more access to the actual process. And we were talking
right
about Amadeuki has a really good job of that.
Process, not commodity, yes. I think is what we say. And that's where quality comes in too, because it's quality versus quantitative analysis.
Where do you move from? For me, when I can keep the conversation in like sort of the social realm with regards to arts, it feels
once you move into like market realms, then you know it's just a cup and it's competing with all the cups on the internet all over or whatever. But if you can get into the story of the artist, what went into it, how did it go? I don't know. I think that's a better conversation that maybe is even more accurate with regards to the value of the art. You know, if you just commodify it, I feel like that can kind of cheapen work.
Can you repeat that same one?
I don't know. whenever I can keep sort of the conversation in the social realm, I think that's why we talked about like why education gets focused on so much, and I think because that's an easy place to go to the social realm on. But I think throughout the arts, the value for the artist, for the buyer, for everything, there's a social community element. But I think as soon as you kind of break that and go to a market realm, you know, I don't know, I'm stealing this from someone, but like you sit down, have an amazing dinner, you're like, that was great, here's $200. You know, you've just kind of ruined the dinner, you know, for everybody. you know what I mean? And the more you can sort of keep it, I think, social, even though everyone needs money and you need money to move forward and things like that, I think that can be a distraction from, I think you might get more by, you know, like using things like Kickstarter. You know, like I remember, like what you and Ross did, where you pre-sold prints. You were really selling a story. You weren't selling your art, and you were able to fund your
well, the same
art.
Thing for We Are Star Trek, or
yeah,
right?
Your exactly.
CD. You sold more CDs up front than you did actually afterward.
Completely. That using Bandcamp, which is like the equivalent of Kickstarter, and I don't know if you guys know what that is, but basically you can sort of. It's a way for you to kind of pre-fund an endeavor that you're going on to, and a lot of people have had a lot of success, a lot of local artists, by sort of selling the story of what they're going to do and offering as an incentive a prize or a bonus after, if you give X amount, you know, if you give $50, you get the poster to my new movie, if you give $100, you get a DVD in the poster, blah, 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 that will, yeah, with our latest album. The first time we made it, we paid it for everything up front, made a small press, we're like a small-time band, you know, got a couple hundred, gave probably half of them away, probably lost $5,000 or something like that. Second time around, recorded one song, said, hey, give what you can. If you give us $10 when we make an album, we'll give it to you. Immediately paid for the whole pressing and recording of the entire album, you know, with that, and then had a physical album that was all, you know, profit from that point forward. We sort of sold the story as opposed to, you know, we talked about the artisan, like the artisan studio tours, you know, I think those are just genius, you know, just getting people involved in the process so they can see the value.
Well, they feel like they're a part of the value, too, and that they can take pride in, like, oh, that thing worked, like, oh, I funded this Kickstarter project or whatever, and you know, now that big giant sculpture that everyone is really enjoying, I helped make that happen. I'm part of the art. I'm not like I may not have the sculptural skills to help that sculpture happen, but I feel engaged with that art in a way that just you know going you know spending some money afterwards for the upkeep might not have the same impact.
You might want to add marketing to that because that's a big part of what they were just talking about. Not just marketing. Coming off of that, I know we didn't really share amongst the four of us this question, but I know when I got this question, it said, why are the arts valuable in the community? I thought about it and realized that events create an opportunity to share an experience that may enlighten you or make you feel differently about something, and that could be either a performance or a movie or a piece of art that you see. And when it comes to the education end of that, I think some people have developed almost a fear of, in some minor way, of the possibility that they might think differently. So there could be an element of avoidance of certain things in order not to feel. Like, I don't want to go to this movie because it's too violent or, you know, or it's too sexual or whatever it might be. So it's kind of bridging that gap too, and of course I
So I don't know. I know we didn't discuss that, but that was something.
Actually, it was funny because at one point we were talking about the question of luxury or what is art for, and I thought you articulated that really well.
Okay. Thank you. I guess we were talking about the universality of art.
Yeah.
Defining who we are.
Yeah.
As a community and as an individual, in a sense. When you think about it, one of my, of the many positive reactions that I had to Charlottesville when I moved here 20 months ago, one of the most positive was stumbling by the garage one night when I saw it open, and I thought that was about the coolest thing I'd ever seen. I really did. I think it was absolutely remarkable that a community had that concept of doing something like that and creating art in a space like that that was in a neighborhood and adjacent to a park that anybody could even experience just by visually seeing it, referencing it as they walk by. It was absolutely remarkable.
It was open.
You know, I think that defines the uniqueness of this community, not just the garage, but I mean so many of the things that are brought to the table as a community, and it defines who we are. It creates Charlottesville as a destination, ultimately. There's a vibe and a uniqueness to the town, to the city, to the environs that everybody in this room contributes to in a certain way as to defining this community. And it would set it apart to travel here as opposed to Richmond or Roanoke or any other community.
And there was something about that art defines the individual. And so if you have strong individuals in a community, it's a stronger, by definition, that sort of, you have individuals who have the freedom of expression and find ways of expressing themselves in any media or space. It's bound to lead to something positive, I would think.
Tied directly into what you're saying about the role of the arts in the venture of developing yourself, whether it's an adult or a child, they make it stronger in some way.
But even into the city plan as well, when you think about it, that we have a downtown mall here, that we have the wall out here that you can write on, that we have the public art that we have that's open and accessible. Even this building itself, where there's a certain design ethic that's going on in terms of the layout. Obviously, the city has had some care and some interest in supporting the arts.
Well,
maybe not enough, but some.
That was really a phenomenal experience listening to all that. I think that's one of the most successful small group discussion sections we've ever had in a creative conversation. You all brought something kind of different but very connected to the question. And I'm really glad we had it on tape. So how much time do we have? Just checking in. No. Oh, not that much time. Okay. Well, that's unfortunate, but we have about 15 minutes, and we're going to have to get out promptly at 2, because there is a discussion about music community, and I don't know the details, but if you are interested in that, I think it's open to the community. But that is happening very shortly after 2. So in terms of how we use the next 15 minutes, I'd like for you all to kind of help articulate what the key concepts are, like in a sentence. As far as either a description of a challenge that we face or a description of an opportunity an issue or a place to move forward from what we all discussed. I can start if no one wants to start. I think that... Does anyone want to start?
No.
Yeah, you start, buddy.
Okay, well... I'm interested in sort of the connection between how we get from the question about youth and education, which is in a lot of ways always at the center, even if they don't make up most of the arts audiences in our community, and livable communities for artists on the opposite end of that spectrum, with all the things that happen in the arts in between. So my questions are, what are the priorities for
education and youth as it relates to this bigger picture question. What do we want to take away from that discussion as part of the larger issue? Is there a single thing that we think is a focus area for that before we move on to talk about artists and some of the other things that came up as we moved our way around the room?
Ask the question one more time.
Sorry, that was confusing. I guess what, if anything, is the opportunity for education and youth as it relates to the value of the arts in our community?
Well, it's so interesting that you say that because in my experience in working with children, they really value art and they love all elements of the arts, whether it's performance or visual or music. And at some point, there are barriers that happen to them, and it's not just financial. Some of it could be, oh, I'm not good enough, so therefore I can't participate. But
Well, and this, I think, ties into the discussion of a place like McGuffey Art Center, a place where, or the garage, where the barrier to entry is relatively low. So how can we look at youth as a potential audience group for some of these key areas in our organizations or entities in the Charlottesville community that we can engage youth with? Is that through school partnerships, better promotion?
One thing I'm thinking in terms of what you just said and what I think about in terms of where we start to lose our youth in general is when they get towards the middle school age, and that's the age where people become self-conscious. It's also when they stop participating in youth programs altogether. And I know as people in the community as a whole, space was mentioned earlier, a need for space. One of the things I'm really interested in is vertical intergenerational communities. As long as the arts are given to children at like the elementary level in a way that to the child seems kind of, as they get older, patronizing, they're going to start to disassociate themselves from it. That's for children. But I think if they're in vertical, you know, intergenerationally vertical communities like the McGuffey Arts Center is a wonderful example of that. But if we had more of that, Lab Arts is another really good one. If you can house the communities together, that might help us possibly stop losing them in the teens and young adult period.
And to that point, art is the tool for self-discovery. And that's the scary thing that 15-year-olds, 13-year-olds are dealing with. And having worked in a lot of nonprofits, you can make a better brochure with 4-year-olds, but the need may be more in the middle years.
I think getting used to bring work, like sort of treating them as we treat, like, I think, a lot of the time with youth art, it's not brought to a state of completion. And like for us, what's completion is the show. You know what I'm saying? Like my wife is an art educator, so she's going to use my photography studio. We're going to take all my stuff down, and they're going to have a formal show, you know, with the cheese and the grape soda and the whole thing and everything like that for these elementary school kids. And that to me seems like I know that I don't bring my work to a good state of finish and completion, and like kind of mirroring the process that we do as adults with youth, it seems like there's some benefit to that.
I started with youth, although it wasn't the kind of core concept that was discussed, because it was the connection between the beginning and the end, this idea of creatives and creative people and nurturing the success of creatives, whether they look like traditional artists or they make bread or something like that. So how can we have a community that from the very beginning of one's life as a person in Charlottesville, they have access to the arts, they understand what being creative can mean for them, can mean for their community. They enter into spaces or events, whether it's a festival or a one-car garage that exposes them to something different, to how we think as individuals and as community members. So I think it's sort of the connecting piece. And the big question for me is for the individuals, the artists, those creatives, what is most needed here? Space was brought up, alternative fundraising was brought up. What are your thoughts? The sort of defining questions that we've come to.
I would love to have a space to improve my work, like more critique. You know, I feel like we're a small community and everybody's friends. I don't get enough feedback that honest feedback to make my work better. You know, I mean, I think a lot of times we discuss funding and things like that, which is really important. But for me, that's not my focus at all. My focus is how do I make my work as amazing as I possibly can. And I think we discussed this with Andrew one time how it would be awesome to. I mean, the CPMG is working at that to a certain extent, I think. But it is I think challenging to find a community of people who want to work at a really high level and how to push each other even further.
Some sort of combination of salon and graduate course.
Yeah.
It's just interesting today on the radio, the mayor of Richmond is declaring 65 blocks of Richmond an arts and business. He's declaring an arts and business initiative, and it's calling it a unique cultural area, and that anybody that works on developing a building in that area will get a tax cut and so on. And clearly that's to develop that area that's not very developed. But when we look at all the storefronts and where we are in this economic time of decline, and they're having conversations about whether the city could help business owners to actually make storefronts more available and affordable and so on, but how can this community take an economic downturn and turn to the artists? And you talked about things like this in Chattanooga, Maggie, examples of really bringing in the arts to make it part of, integral part of the community, a struggling community.
So I think some of the overarching things that we've talked about are space for dialogue, visibility, starting conversations in new ways with intergenerational people, so not just within the arts community, but within school programs, with people who might just be walking by an art center and for fear or other reasons don't know that they can engage. So changing the way people see, think about, talk about creative activity in our community. Any other closing thoughts?
What about just, I mean, I know we have a lot of free programs in the community, but even just, it seems like just getting youth familiar with walking into the Paramount and sort of seeing that sort of gilded ceiling and like, that it's, that even though it's beautiful, it's not a place that isn't welcoming to...
That's a big part of what our Arts Access Project focuses on, and you know, we can't do that all as individuals, but we can do that by networking organizations that either work directly with youth or work directly in the theater. So it's that connectedness, and also just taking the first step, taking a group into Second Street Gallery. So starting somewhere and encouraging our colleagues to do so as well. Okay, I think we might be on time. So we've got 8 minutes. Please fill out your yellow sheet. And I think, is there any other... The yellow sheets, when you're done with it, can go on the front table up here. There's materials out here on the table that kind of got moved toward the windows about some of your organizations and also about some PCA projects. So please find me if you have questions. Thank you so much for coming.